Hello all, and welcome to the 28th episode of the Ocean Decade Show, a podcast dedicated to guiding you down the yellow brick road of this global initiative to transform the ocean, housed within the American Shoreline Podcast Network family. My name is Taylor Gels, and I'm your host and tour guide on our adventure through the Ocean Decade. It's funny, I started numbering these episodes when I first went along, and it's still amazing to me to watch it tick up and up and up every month, and that we're almost at 30 episodes is just crazy, because I can at the same time remember every single one of these conversations, but they're also a bit of a blur at the same time. So this is just crazy that we're still going up, and there's still so many stories left to tell with this decade, both in terms of scope and in terms of number of years. We're not even halfway through yet. And one myth that I like to dispel to young people who talk to me about their interest in marine science, ocean science. I'm in this point in my career now where people are starting to ask me for informational interviews, which is kind of hilarious to me because I still don't feel like I have a lot of wisdom to give yet. But one of the things I try to tell young people, especially if they're trying to go into graduate school, is that you don't have to sail or dive or go out on boats at all in order to have a successful, meaningful career in this field. This is especially important personally, and I can speak to them from personal experience because I get horribly seasick. I can hold my own in like a boat that goes around a port, or on like really, really calm days. When I studied abroad in the Caribbean, I was able to do the little boats like from, you know, main island to like little island next door, but not anything further than that. Anything beyond that is really too much for me. And so I think my seasickness is why I'm so actually drawn to facets of the ocean science world that actually take place out on the ocean. It's kind of like a weird self-torture of, you know, wanting something that my mind and my body and my stomach especially cannot have. And for, you know, a large contingent of the ocean science community, doing ocean work does involve going out on boats. And this month's episode of the podcast is no exception. And when you think about, though, at least when I think about going out on boats for ocean science, this is coming, I guess, from a very first world perspective. I think about those modern research vessels, you know, packed to the brim with computers and scientists and purpose designed for weeks to months out on the open ocean, collecting data, running samples, you name it. But the focus of our episode this month kind of turns that idea on its head. The fact that, you know, you need these fantastical million-billion-dollar boats in order to do this work. Because this month we're talking about a tall sailing ship, like the ones you're probably picturing in your head. When I say tall sailing ship, I think that that immediately creates an image in a lot of people's heads from, you know, ye olden days. And this ship is right now sailing around the world doing research, contributing to the Ocean Decade. The One Ocean Expedition, which is the focus of our podcast this month, is a circumnavigation of the globe by the Norwegian tall ship. I'm going to let my guest say its name because I'm going to butcher it if I try to say it. And the goal of this expedition is to create attention and share knowledge about the crucial role of the ocean for sustainable development in a global perspective. This expedition is a recognized part of the UN Decade of Ocean Science for Sustainable Development. It left Arendal, Norway in August 2021. And is currently floating around somewhere out in the world, and we'll learn today where it is and what it's been doing. And before it finishes up, which is just kind of incredible to me, because we know how big the ocean is, and we know that it takes up so much of the Earth, but the fact that this ship will sail 55,000 nautical miles before it comes back home, just that scale is immense, and I can't really even picture that, and visit 36 ports worldwide. So I'm really lucky today to have as my guest Håkon, who's the general manager for the Lehmkuhl Foundation and the expedition leader for the One Ocean Expedition. So hello, Håkon. Thank you so much for joining me this month.
Hello, and thank you for the invitation. It's an honor to be here and to talk about the project. So thank you. It's great.
So first, let's start out with a little bit about you. Who are you and what's been your path to the Ocean Decade?
Well, I was born up at the west coast in Norway on an island called Stord, So the ocean has been a part of me since I was since before I could walk. And then when I was in the younger ages, I also actually started sailing on this ship, which I'm now leading.
Oh, really?
And that's yeah. So I worked on deck for a 9-year period, actually, every season while I did my studies, not a navigational study. I've actually got a teacher's education. But then I knew how this worked. So I went from the smaller boats on the island. I went to Bergen, where the home port of Statoil Lehmkuhl is. And that's where I mustered on board and worked on deck, for some time. And, I left the ship in 2005, got off the ship, and then I actually started doing festivals, maritime festivals, also including this Statoil Lehmkuhl, which I had with me for many of the festivals I did, also with music festivals. And then I got back to the ship again in 2016, but then as the CEO of the foundation. So I started really on the bottom of the ship, and now I'm sitting and administrating it. So I also know how it is to be on board, and right now I'm actually really envious. They're out in the Atlantic, and I just got a message from the captain that had really good sailing. We have been up to 50 knots on the sail the last hours.
Wow. That is crazy. I bet, you get a little bit of fear of missing out when you hear those updates from the middle of the Atlantic.
Yeah. But it's also good.
It's also good, yes. You've kind of traversed this whole ship, and so I bet you know it better than anyone out there.
Yeah, I know it quite well, of course, but also things have changed since I was working on deck. But now I learn much more about the totality of the ship, also that it needs an office to run the ship. We are both dependent on each other. And like I say, we are one big team working to get the ship across the ocean and to promote the more sustainable oceans for the future. So it's a very nice mission for everyone in the organization or foundation, which is running the ship.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the foundation and just how it kind of operates on the back end. What does your current job entail?
About the foundation, just the story about the foundation or?
Both. Yeah. Start with the foundation and then in your role in it.
Yeah. Well, very short, as short as possible. The ship is 109 years old. I think that's also quite amazing. She was built in Germany in 1914 and given to England as a war prize after the First World War. Given over to Norway. We bought it here to Bergen in Norway in 1921 and has since been on the Norwegian flag, except during the Second World War. In the mid-70s, it was about to get sold out from... It was about to get sold out of Norway. Then was a rich ship owner who bought it, ran it for his own money, and gave it to the foundation in 1977. So it's the foundation has been running the ship since 77. In that time, it didn't look so good. It was not well kept because it had not been sailing. So gradually, we've been upgrading the ship. And in 2002, that's a magical year because then we started sailing full time. So then we could engage crew and do a 100% 12-month engagement for everybody working in the foundation, which then has been fantastic to refit the ship, to prepare her also for the bigger voyages. And when I came on board as a CEO in 2016, one of the first things we started to plan was this, the One Ocean Expedition. So I'm also the expedition leader, the project manager, which you can call, for the whole expedition, also being the CEO. But we used 5 years to plan this huge, huge project, which has been fantastic and time-consuming, but really, really, really nice.
Yeah, you're kind of getting to some things I was curious about later and that we can bring up now too. So like, what is planning for these expeditions like? You're gone for, 21 months, you sail 55,000 nautical miles. Like, what goes into that? It's taken years to plan this out.
Yeah, I also like to say like these 5 years of planning, We knew like every sailor has wanted to sail around the world, or many of them, me as myself included. But when I started in 2016, we started working on this. We want to do this, but we're not sailing around the world just for fun. We want a mission. What are we doing? We are quite a sustainable ship. We are using 70% every year almost under sail. Like I say, we have been where the future wants to be. We have been for over 100 years where the future wants to be, mainly using the nature to move our ship forward. And that's where we come to the idea that, you know, can we make a ship also into a research vessel? Can we use this more for students? And then we need to get partners, because it's also extremely financially big risk about this. And like I say, I've been doing festivals also for many years. It's like, it's much of the similarities of doing a festival. If you get some good headliners on the top at an early stage, then other partners want to play along on the same lineup.
Song sheet, yeah.
Yeah. So like if you get Rolling Stones and want to play, then other bands want to play as well. And that's also the same of building a project like this. So I think it was in 2017, we presented this to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and those who were working with the UN Ocean Decade. And they got really enthusiastic about it. And then we started to get the University of Bergen in. Then we got the Marine Research Institute, and we got the Polar Institute, and Nelson Environmental Institute, and we got recognized as a part of the Ocean Decade. And so the snowballs just started rolling and got bigger and bigger. And then finally we had enough partners, and we had also enough financial strength to say, we are going to do it. So that's why we needed 5 years to do this huge, get this huge project up and going, or up and sailing.
Yeah, that's, I can't even imagine the process of going around and trying to pitch that to people. It's like, how do you get people to get the importance of this from a scientific point of view, but also from just, a cultural point of view, and the kind of value of the romanticism of this tall ship going around in the whole world and collecting data. And that's just, I'm so glad you were able to find good partners to help you go forward, because that's not always, it's not always easy. And I bet it wasn't easy.
No, it was not. It took a lot of time. What I think has been, I just had before this session here, I also had a meeting with a new potential partner for the future plans. And what is so nice now, the ship is on her way back, and it's now the 15th of April, she will come back to Bergen. And
is it on set to come back for that day? It's not going to get delayed, you don't think?
No, we've been out sailing for 20 months and we have not been delayed to any port. And also, it's also worth mentioning that when we plan this expedition, we had what we call sustainable route planning, because of course we have a diesel engine on board the ship. That's not where, because we're also a commercial ship, we need to get into port at a given time. But by planning this expedition, we call it sustainable route planning, with a very low average speed to get from port A to port B. That gives us the possibility to sail as much as possible, even if the winds are not favorable, so that we can tack and, use more time to get to the port. But if we have a lot of bad weather, then it is possible to start the engine so that we keep the average speed, so that we are in port at the exact time where we should be.
That's so interesting. I want to get into more about that too, in a little bit. But one of the kind of questions that came to my mind too when thinking about this expedition was, how do you feed the people on board? Like, how do people? What's the kind of like very human part of planning this? Like picking up supplies and planning that. Like that has to be a whole, it's one thing to get the funding and get the partners to like help it happen, and then you have to do all the very practical logistical stuff of, where do you pick up paper towels? At what port,
Yeah, but it's a good question. And of course, on some of the legs, we are quite long time out at sea. For example, when we sailed from Valparaiso in Chile to Tahiti, it was 31 days at sea on the tall ship. But I can assure you that everybody gets good and also sufficient with food. So it's a good logistics done by the stewards together with the every agent we have in every port to get enough supplies for the different legs we're out sailing on.
Well, that's good. Yeah, 31 days. That's you might get a little stir crazy at that point, make it not seeing land or like, yeah. Have you been out on a ship that long before? Have you gotten to join any of the legs of the expedition?
Yeah, but not on on that leg. But yes, of course, it's also very important for me because also one thing is what is happening out at sea with the students we have on board, of course, and also the researchers, but also in ports. We've been working very closely with the embassies, the Norwegian embassies in every port we've been, and, you know, made a really good ocean program in almost every port we've been, with meetings and conferences and receptions, all focusing on a more sustainable ocean. And that's also then meant that I have had to been in many of the ports and taking part of the voyages. So I took the ship from Jamaica to Havana in November 21, and also sailed around Cape Horn in April last year, and also was up in Japan, and took the sail from Yokohama to Ishigaki and Naha, and I was also did Singapore, Jakarta, and just across New Year now, we sailed, took the ship from Maputo to Cape Town, which was a fantastic voyage. We had students from over 30 nationalities on board, which I also think is one of the, which is needed more, especially in these strange times we're in, living in now, to break down borders and see that we are all part of this world. It was fantastic. We had students from Africa, from Asia, from United States, and from Europe, all merged together, sleeping in hammocks, tight by tight, close to each other, working together on subjects, and all with different cultural backgrounds, but all on the same boat, that, you know, they, we all have to interact and work and cooperate together to get this ship going, which is also a brilliant picture of the world. It is only this world. It's only this ship with the limited resources, and we all have to work together to get the ship moving.
Ships are great analogies for, you know, how we all need to work together in, you know, in the rest of the world. That's, yeah, it's a perfect analogy. So tell me more about the students and researchers that have been involved in each leg. What kinds of, you know, how did you coordinate that? What kinds of people were on the ships and what kind of work have they been doing?
Yeah, that's also a good question. And I cannot give you all the answers, but as part of the preparations to this voyage, we got the Norwegian Marine Institute. They are one of our partners. So they are leading the scientific committee who equipped the ship with a lot of instruments on board. So we have a scientific echo sounder on board. We have a weather station, a wave sensor. We do water sampling. We have a ferry box on board. We do PCO2 measures. We also have a hydrophone on board, which unfortunately got damaged, but that's going to be arranged. Yeah, and we're also collecting eDNA. We're also having optical cameras. And so that's been on board. And at all time, we've had two researchers who has been doing the measures from these instruments and sending them back so that they can be analyzed. And it's been a different focus on the different legs, because also some of these institutes have charted the ship on the different legs. For example, in the Caribbean, we had students from the Bjerknes Center, also from Scripps, and also University of the West Indies, who had their own topic and did their own research on that leg. From Havana, we had the Norwegian Marine Institute taking the ship to Nassau, to Miami, and to New York, where they also did their own specific research in addition to all the instruments that are on board. In Japan, we got a Japanese research institute like Yamstek and UPRI. They came on board the ship and did their studies, putting out Argo buoys all along the route.
Oh, great.
So this is just, you know, I could go on and on. So we had the
Polar Institute. Yeah, I bet you could. Yeah.
So it's a different focus on the different legs where the different institutes have the specific interest. Like also now, which I just mentioned, when we sailed down the Agulha stream currents from Maputo to Cape Town, we had the Nansen Environmental Center on board together with the European Space Agency, who's then doing comparative studies of what the satellites are measuring of waves and temperature and currents. So it is fantastic to see, and they're all amazed how fantastic this ship is functioning for this mission.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the ship, because I think, as my intro was trying to get to a little bit, you don't necessarily think of, like, 109-year-old tall ship as, you know, the perfect ocean science research vessel. So what's gone into transforming it into what it is today?
Well, I just mentioned some of the equipment which is on board, and this was also, it's like the 5 years of planning with all these fantastic dedicated partners. There have been probably 70, 80 persons working in different subcommittees, like a scientific committee who has been taking part in the preparations of the ship. So we've been in dock as a part of a preparation, you know, installing deck or sounders, installing weather stations and so on. So it's been an ongoing and also a very costly project. But what is also nice here...
I can imagine, yeah.
but what is also nice here that we have... I would like to talk about how is this possible, because we have all these fantastic partners within science, within academics, within research, but also in commerce, that they all love the mission of the expedition, and it's created fantastic cooperation between the partners, also among partners who usually are competitive to each other. But none of them has demanded exclusively rights to be partners on the expedition, because they think the mission is much bigger than their right to claim exclusivity. Which for me is very interesting, because I've been doing festivals, and then usually if you get like a bank in as a partner, they say, we will be the only bank to be supporting this festival. But this, you know, with the main goal of creating intention and sharing knowledge about the crucial role of the ocean, that is something which is affecting all of us. So I think this, like the partnership of the expedition, is also a brilliant picture for the solutions we need to you know, to get more healthy oceans for the future. It doesn't matter if we are competitive, if our ocean cannot give us the, you know, the vital things we need to live.
Yeah, exactly. I feel like what the Ocean Decade, one of the things that it's been really successful in doing over the past few years is breaking down those boundaries between competitors. And so that's, it makes perfect sense why you all are a part of the Ocean Decade. But how did those conversations go in particular, and how is what the One Ocean Expedition is doing, how is it supporting the goals and outcomes of the Ocean Decade?
Well, I think we are doing it quite many ways, like what you say, the vision for the Ocean Decade is like the science we need for the ocean we want. Like one of the things which actually was said by the General Secretary Vladimir Ryabinin, he was on board the ship in Yokohama, and what he said, what I think is very nice, that what you're also doing with this ship and this project and this expedition is that you are minimizing or reducing the gap between science and the public. And that's also, you know, one of the seven Ocean Decade outcomes for the ocean we want is also to make an inspiring and engaging ocean. Of course, we come in there. We also have an accessible ocean. Everything, all the data we collect is shared and so on. Also, safe ocean, like all the seven Ocean Decade outcomes is what we are supporting, but some more than others. And, you know, we have developed, if you're allowed to say that, the vision for us, because the new Ocean Decade vision is the science we need for the ocean we want. I'm not a scientist myself. And I think that has also been very interesting for me to see how this expedition has developed, because I have challenges to understand all the scientific articles that are written about the health and the situation of our oceans. So that's why I've just told so many researchers when they're trying to explain, to tell them, I am not a researcher. I am not a scientist. If you want me to understand, you have to say it in the language that I understand. And if you think bigger on this, 99% of the world's population are not scientists, but they are sitting with the answer. So we have to also challenge the scientist to speak a language that everybody understands. So what we're saying, instead of also just getting the science we need for the ocean we want, what we can do make a difference is also to get the people we need for the ocean we want. Because you have to depend on the people.
That's, yeah, very apt and very perfect because, yeah, we can get the science we need for the ocean we want, but if we're not communicating that in a way that individuals understand or that they're, you know, willing to engage with or accept, then we're nowhere, I think.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that's one of the big, big challenges that when the media take some of these reports and it's just the climate reports and it's, you know, it just becomes, it's difficult to understand for many. And it's also very dark, very serious, which of course it is. But, and if you don't understand what you're reading, then you just, you don't believe in it. And that's why I think you get many of these, what you call them in English or American, klimafornekter, the climate, they don't believe in it, the climate changes. And I would also just like to add there, through this expedition, I've many times quoted one of my favorite art musicians, which is Tom Waits. It's one of his songs where he says, if there's one thing you can say about mankind, there's nothing kind about man. We've been, you know, tearing down this the world and the ocean in so many ways the last 150 years. We forgot that we are a part of the nature, part of the ocean, that we have to work together with the world to survive also ourselves. But if you also read the news, it's very easy to get depressed, especially for the younger generations. I had a parent who came up to me after I had had a lecture about the expedition, and he said, it's so nice to hear about the project where you can create hope. Because my teenage kids, he said, they just tell me that, Dad, you know, we don't care about this climate thing. You have already messed it so much up that there is nothing more to save. So we're just going to live our lives exactly as we want. And that's an extremely depressing thought. If the young people go around with that impression, then we are in serious danger. So what we want to do with the UN Ocean Decade and with the One Ocean Expedition is not getting the people we need for the ocean we want, but we shall also then do all we can to create hope, and last but not least, remember to have fun along the way. It sounds like so, very often when you say we're going to have fun, then people think that's not so serious. Yes, but it's bloody serious to have fun because it's a serious situation we are in. But we have to create hope and we have to be enthusiastic and we must have fun.
Yeah, I think that's so crucial. And that's why I think the events you've been doing along the way in the different ports are so interesting. And do you have, this leads into, well, one of the questions I had, do you have like a particularly fun story or something that comes to the top of your mind from this expedition overall? It can be kind of whatever, but you know, something that's happened on one of the legs, something that's happened in one of the ports, is anything popping to the top of your mind?
Oh, there are many, but I haven't, there's been many fun things and many nice things. I think I would go back to the last leg I was at, where we had all of these students from all these different nationalities, many of them who had never been on board a ship before, also with their all with the different cultural backgrounds. Also when it comes to, you know, gender mix, some of them are coming from cultures where you do not sleep together in the same room as men and women sleep together in the same room. But on our ship, it's quite fun to see how your cultural background actually, you know, it doesn't matter so much when you come on board the ship. Because on board our ship, I just have to explain to you, we have place to up to 135 voyage crew, and they all sleep in two big rooms in hammocks. They're all sharing the same rooms, so that everybody gets to know each other for good and for bad. And there are, you know, they have separate toilets and showers, but they sleep in hammocks. And so what I like to see, the magic that is happening when you're putting on board 100 strangers, and it takes like one night, 24 hours, they're all very, you know, there's so much new information. It's a total new world where none of their safe, they can't escape into their room, into the hotel room. But to see that it's just like 24 hours and then something clicks, and then suddenly you get these groups, and then suddenly you have new networks, and suddenly you have new friends. To see the magic which is happening here, that is something that makes me really, really proud. And this is also what I think is, you know, there's fun stories, but also nice stories about this, but also the serious part about this, which has also come more and more up for me, is that, you know, my ship, Stars Lehmkuhl, she is, of course, a very important ship for me, but I must be honest and say that there are two ships that are even more important than Stars Lehmkuhl, and that is partnerships and friendships.
There you go. Wordplay. I love it.
Now, I've thought more and more about it. Yes. Well, yeah, that's actually the most important thing in the air. That's the answer that's the solution for the challenges we are facing. That is more partnerships and more friendships, because that's how we can make things work together.
Yeah, and the ship is kind of a perfect catalyst for creating both of those. It's something to focus energy around. It's something that, you know, people on board can either love or hate, depending on if the ship is behaving. And so it's just this, it's a something that people can rally around together. It's this kind of beacon of hope and science and community and partnership. And it's, I can only imagine. I'd love to be in a port. I can imagine it, like, coming into a port and getting to see that is just kind of awe-inspiring as well.
You should join us. I would also just add there, there's one thing is about the students. We had a lot of different groups on board, but I would also like to mention one more. We had a leg in between two Japanese islands, from Naha, Okinawa, to Ishigaki, which was a top executive leg. It was chartered by an organization, several organizations, and they invited top politicians and CEOs of big companies on this leg. And that was also, like, what have I learned from this? I was taking part in this to see how this worked. And these are people who are, you know, they wake up in their suits and they walk around in the suits all day. And
they have suit pajamas.
They have suit pajamas. But, you know, it's a brilliant way of getting top leaders to, you know, get their feet down on the ground, because, you know, their titles doesn't mean anything on board. My crew teach them. They go sea watches. They handle a ship. And then they have a program, of course, focusing on sustainable ocean activities. But to see that, you know, we are all the same. My goal is for the future to get top global leaders to come on board on a voyage, sleeping in hammocks, talking together, doing stuff, because I'm sure that would make a big difference for the world in the years to come, because we are all just humans and we have to work together. And it was just brilliant to see all these people who you've just seen in the news, you've seen them on the telly, and they're doing their speeches and talking and this and that. But here they had to hold the ropes together. They had to climb aloft to get in the sails when it was blowing up. They had to wash the decks. And they had brilliant discussions, standing on the lookout, standing at the helm, to talk about this in an informal but as important way as ever before.
I love that idea. I also... My immediate thought also goes to the fact that a lot of politicians are a little elderly, and so the idea of them trying to get in and out of hammocks is just a great image in my mind.
Yeah.
Some poor staffer will be having to help their elderly principal out of a hammock.
I must also tell you, it is very nice with a hammock. They are not so difficult to get to jump in.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, yeah. And it is also, believe it or not, it's much more comfortable to sleep in a hammock when it's wavy than to be in a fixed bunk.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Back and forth. You're stabilized in a hammock.
It's a very practical method for, you know, having all the people in the ship that you need to have in the ship, and also making sure that, yeah, they can sleep comfortably.
Yeah, that's good.
So the ship is currently in the Atlantic on its way back to Bergen in April. And so when it gets back, I've heard there's going to be some sort of celebration when it gets back to Bergen, the One Ocean Week.
Yeah, which is also, yeah, it's also something which all involved in the One Ocean expedition is really proud of. Like what we see, what waves this expedition has created, not only along the way, but also now on her return. There was always a plan that we wanted an One Ocean expedition summit when the ship came back. That has now developed into a One Ocean Week, the first edition of the One Ocean Week in Bergen from the 15th of April till the 21st of April. So the ship is coming in on the 15th. His Majesty King Harald will come to Bergen and stand on and wait for the ship to come in.
So he that's fantastic.
Here. It's fantastic. And then there's going to be the following week, there's going to be loads of international conferences and meetings and gatherings and events in the whole town here, all focusing on the ocean. So it's fantastic. And it's just getting more and more activities coming up. And also we are very fortunate to have UN Special Envoy for the Ocean, Peter Thompson, is coming here. He's also a goodwill ambassador for the expedition. The Prime Minister is putting his ocean conference to Bergen on the Monday, 17th. And also the Crown Prince is coming here. So it's like, it's the first edition. And, you know,
it's the place to be.
It's the place to be. So the message out there to everyone who's listening, and this is the first time this is going to happen. And if you still have time, if this is going to be on air before the 15th of April, you should book
it. It will be.
Because what is fantastic is that when you see the ship coming in, they said in the old days that the singing ship is a happy ship. It should always come to port and leave port with a song, because that proved that the crew on board had a good time. Now, Statsraad Lehmkuhl is also known as a singing ship. And what is going to happen as the ship slowly enters the port? It will be manned by cadets who are on board now, up in the Marston Yards, and they're going to sing the shanty in, as there will be cannon salutes from the fortress here in Bergen Port. It will be sung into port, and she's the pride of Bergen, so it's going to be thousands of people here, and the king is coming, and then we're going to have a festive day on the Saturday, and also a family day on the Sunday, and then just conferences and meetings and workshops the following days. So it's you should come.
That's fantastic. And I wanted to talk about you and I had chatted about this when we communicated over email, the singing into it. And so in doing research on you too, one of the first things that popped up was this storm weather shanty choir. And I know that isn't the topic of our conversation today, but I've been fascinated by sea shanties since they blew up online during the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. So can you tell me a little bit more about this group and this passion of yours?
Yeah. I founded the storm weather shanty choir. And actually that is also thanks to this ship, Statsraad Lehmkuhl, which I told you.
Oh, so it is related. Perfect.
Yeah, it is. That's, you know, my first shanty I heard on board Statsraad Lehmkuhl when I started working on board the ship on deck in 1996. That's where I heard the songs. The captain was singing them, and then found out that these songs are fantastic. They're also, you know, getting a little team to work really hard together and really well together to get the ropes and to get the sails up. So then I started, while I was sailing on deck, I started in 2000 the Storm Weather Shanty Choir with six musicians. And we are still together, and we are touring worldwide. We've been to the US, but we also released seven albums. And also on board Lehmkuhl, whenever I'm on board, then I make sure that we do set sails by singing shanties. And actually, you know, a week after the ship has returned. We're actually going out on a specific shanty voyage to the Shetland Islands, where we are just focusing on singing shanties and getting the sails up.
That's so awesome. I need to look up more videos. I'm really excited about that, that'll be a good part of the ship coming in.
Good to hear that you like it, though. It is really good. Like I said, having fun when it's so serious. It's also what I say here, that music in times of, in dark times or when times are rough, then music is an extremely important thing. And I say that music and song and singing is bloody serious business, because it also does something with us when we sing together. It makes strong boundaries between people. So I really mean it. The singing ship is a happy ship that goes for every company, that goes for every family. If people are happy, then you hear them sing. And if they sing, then you as a leader can also relax.
Yeah, and I have this beautiful image in my head of like, this probably happens somewhere, but you can't ever plan it. It's like the idea of people singing on a ship and having a shanty and it's going along. And then, you know, there's like whale songs going on beneath you. I don't know. It's probably doesn't happen much in real life, but I just love that kind of imagery of like above and below the ocean, that we and nature are connected and doing the same sorts of things, all singing.
And like, as you say now, it sometimes sounds like a cliche, but it's how it should be. Like, say again, to what I repeat myself, like the last 150 years, we have, mankind have forgotten that we are a part of the nature. We are superior, and we've just been exploiting and exploiting and exploiting. And then there's nature hits us and tells us, no, guys, you can't do this.
Yeah. Remember, you're part of us too.
Yes. You're a part of us too. So yeah.
Exactly. So the ship will be in Bergen for this one ocean week, which is fantastic. And then I talked on the podcast last month about the recently announced Ocean Decade Conference in Barcelona in 2024. So I know that's getting a little bit further out, but how will the ship and the One Ocean Expedition be involved in that event?
Yeah, so we are now working really hard 24/7, not only to prepare the ship to come back in a fortnight, but also to soon be able to launch the future plans of the ship, because the One Ocean Expedition has set a totally new course for Statsraad Lehmkuhl. So for the future, we have said that, you know, our ship, we will strengthen and develop the cooperation with our partners within science, education, and commerce, both nationally, but even more internationally. We want more global partners in the years to come. So we are now planning a new expedition, and we said we're going to be an active ambassador for the UN Ocean Decade, and also of course for the seafaring nation of Norway. And we're planning a new expedition in 2025. So before this, we hope that there will be a place for us in Barcelona in April next year, where we can also talk about what we have done, but also where we are heading in 24. And in 25, we are now working on, and hopefully we'll be able to launch the new, even more exciting plans, that we will leave from Bergen during One Ocean Week in April, go first northwards, then we'll be down in Nice, where we hope we can stay during the UN Ocean Conference in June in Nice. And from there, we set sail for the Northwest Passage. So there are many things we're working on now. And then we are planning now the preliminary, I'm just saying, and I'm really emphasizing preliminary plan.
Preliminary, we got that, it, yeah.
Yes, very important to say that we are then planning going down the west coast of US, looking at having a longer stop in Seattle, San Francisco, and LA, and see if we, together with the embassies and with local partners or global partners, can do some One Ocean Week Seattle, One Ocean Week San Francisco, something like that, together with our partners, to focus it on together with students, with everyone who wants to focus on the ocean, that we can do something together there. And then sail around the Panama Canal Channel, through the Panama Channel to Colombia, and then work ourselves on our way up again to Norway and be back after 12 months and open the One Ocean Week in 2026.
Well, if you want to come to DC during that time, let me know, and we can that would be really fun to have the ship there too. We could come into Port of Baltimore, or if you can get up the Potomac.
Well, since you're saying it, there is also a possibility, because we have actually been invited, the ship has been invited to come down to USA in May, June, July 26. I think it's 250 years celebration.
Oh.
And then I think the ports are New Orleans, Baltimore, New York, Norfolk.
Norfolk, yeah.
So we are actually considering this. You know, we'll go back to Norway on April 26th and just set sail again and come down and take part in your celebrations.
Well, yeah, let me know if that's the case, because that would be really fun to have you on the East Coast too, the U.S. So moving toward, this has been such a fantastic conversation and answered all the kinds of questions that I had been thinking about. And one thing I want to hear from you, and that I ask all of my guests this, and I'm really interested in your perspective, because you're, you know, you've had such a life intertwined with this ship and the sea in such a different way than so many people who work on ocean issues. So what to you would be considered a successful ocean decade? So we reached 2030 and we're looking back. What has happened that you would say, yes, this has been a successful endeavor that we're glad that we participated in?
Yeah, many things there. What I see...
I know, it's a big question.
Big question. Of course, the answer should then be that in 2030, we have future generations. Like, you know, they've been done so good international, global agreements to ensure a more healthier oceans, that will save the future generations. I think that must be the goal of the ocean decade also, to make a sustainable ocean for the future generations that are coming after us. What I see, like, use our little ship as a little world. When we set sail in August 2021, it was also a bit rushed on the crew, who didn't feel, you know, they were on top of it, that they were experts in teaching in sustainable ocean activities, which was never expected either. But now I've been following the expedition for so long time, and also to see how our organization is changing in our culture and in how we behave and on how we treat the ocean, if we have a continuously focus on the challenges, but also a continuously focus on the solution, by also saying to ourselves that we cannot save the ocean alone, but we can all make a positive difference. So what we are saying with our little world on our ship, that when you go ashore, you should be an ocean ambassador. That's also what we have on our branding, becoming an ocean ambassador. So maybe that also should go for the ocean decade, that we have global ocean ambassadors who all knows about the challenges, but all are fighting for the solutions to ensure healthier oceans for the future.
I think that's a great, you know, hope for what the next generation can do and can be, and not even just the next generation, but what I've been so fascinated in that the Ocean Decade has done so well thus far is bring in partners who didn't realize that they had a stake in the ocean and didn't realize that they made a difference or could make a difference in this space. So yeah, it's just broadening the reach of people who care about the ocean. I so wish that, your ship could get inland to talk to some of the inland people, but, because it's coastal and port areas have a better understanding, I think, of their connection to the ocean. And we need more of that in inland areas. But we'll have them on the ships, and then they go back to where they are, and they can be the ocean ambassadors that help spread the message that way when the ship can't physically get there.
Yeah. But we can get them to the sea. So that's also what we've seen. We have many people who have never seen the ocean before. They come on board and join the legs. So if we cannot get in inland, we should get the people from the inland down and join us on the voyage.
That's exact. Yeah. If you can't bring the ship to them, bring them to the ship. Exactly.
Yeah.
So where can listeners go to learn more about the ship, what's happening next? I know that when I was perusing around your website, you know, that you can like go on future legs and things. I'm sure that some people listening will be like, how can I get myself on one of these legs in the future? So where can people go to learn more about the expedition and the ship itself?
Absolutely. And also, of course, not only sail with us, but if there are some companies or research institutes who would like to become partners of the future expedition, they should just reach out, because this is, we can just make it as big as the others allow us and want to join in. So we have two web pages. The one which is most easier to say in English is www.oneoceanexpedition.com. That's for the expedition. And we have one for the ship, which is then www.lemkul.no. And that's difficult to spell. Lemkul is Lehmkuhl.
I will make sure that both of those links too are in the description of the podcast, so people can just copy and paste and go to it more easily too. Yeah, because I'm sure you didn't have trouble getting that domain name.
That's true.
Well, thank you so much, Håkon, for joining me this month and walking me through the expedition and the ship and your background, and love your perspectives on how you're really making a difference. Good luck, fair weather as the ship comes into its final port, and I'm really excited to see what it does next, and hope we can continue to document how it's working with Ocean Decade along the way. If you put some recording stuff in there, I'll happily do a podcast from one of the less rough legs.
You are very welcome on board, and thank you so much also for finding interest in the project and the expedition. We really appreciate that, and hope to continue good cooperation with you.
Exactly. Thank you everyone for listening, and we will talk to you next month.